Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the following on podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman, and alongside me, as ever, is Jarrod Kimber, looking back at a full day's play at the Aegeus Bowl between England and West Indies in the first Test match. The Test poised brilliantly after a hard-fought day's cricket, which we will look back on with our various moments, shots, balls, takes, anodyne press conference moments, and all the rest of the shebang that we do on the following on the podcast. It's me, it's Jarrod, and we're just about to get underway. Well, thanks for listening. There's a lot of cricket podcasts out there. The fact that you've chosen our one is something that we should be very proud of. You might have heard another podcast before listening to this one. If you're a cricket fan, you almost certainly know what happened today in terms of the score. England in second innings, finishing 15 without loss, still trailing by 99 runs after some attritional cricket from West Indies. Craig Brathwaite, well, we know that's how he plays, 65, his first score over 49 in 2 years. Shane Dowrich, what a turnaround for him. He averaged about four last time he was in England. He hit 61, and Ruston Chase took 142 deliveries to hit 47. Ben Stokes did it with ball as well as bat, 4 for 49, 3 for 62 from Anderson. But we'll talk no doubt about the combined figures of Mark Wood and Jofra Archer. Some unplayable deliveries towards the end of the day, but somehow Rory Burns and Dom Sibley are still there. But a lot of work to do. Let's get on with the show.
Story of the day.
Jarrod, story of the day. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that West Indies have out-batted and out-bowled England so far in this Test match. I think we thought they had the possibility of out-bowling them, although I still think it's a bit optimistic, perhaps. But certainly, I think their batsmen handled the conditions when the ball was moving around better, and they stuck to it. I don't think that they've been massively better than England, but I think they've been better enough times. For just little things like, there was all this talk, and Sky did this whole thing about how you had to pitch up on this pitch to get wickets. It was quite clear early on that you had to pull back a little bit again. And I don't think England, you know, I think they kept going full, especially to someone like Ruston Chase. He doesn't like the ball at him very much at all. And I think they gave him a lot of full balls. So I think there was a couple of mistakes there. But yeah, story of the day is I think West Indies has just been a little bit better so far at this point in the game.
Certainly the stats will show that they got more swing. Marginally, there's not been a great deal of swing, but that's surprising in England for the visitors to get more swing than English bowlers.
You've got to factor in the conditions though too.
Well, that's the other thing. There were better bowling conditions on days one, what we got of it, 17.4 and all that, and on days two, day three was the best day for batting, so that shouldn't be forgotten as well. Also, I suppose you could say as well, you know, Mark Wood and Jofra Archer combined must only have about 20 tests experience, and Jofra Archer and Normark would have played a great deal of first class cricket either. So again, that may be a difference between the two sides.
Well, I mean, you say that, but don't forget, well, maybe this is unfair, but only two bowlers for the West Indies took wickets as well. You know, they split all the wickets between Gabriel and Holder, although I still think Roach bowled well, and Joseph didn't need to bowl that much, but I don't think Jofra bowled particularly poorly at all. Wood, I thought, bowled very fast. He does what he does. I think maybe could have targeted the body a little bit more at times, a couple of extra short spells. But other than that, I thought they bowled okay. I just thought West Indies played to the conditions a little bit better and, you know, tried to play within themselves. There's no one in that West Indies side that's looking at themselves and going, I'm the best batsman in the world at the moment. So, you know, they are going to have to graft a little bit more. And someone like Roston Chase, I think he's a brilliant player of spin, but he does struggle against seam bowling. So for him to stay in for 140 balls, I think is a testament to how well he handled it.
So a lot was spoken about before the series about Jason Holder and Ben Stokes. And why not? I mean, the two captains, you know, with Joe Root not playing in this test match, vitally important to the fortunes of their team. So it's proved. Holder took a six for... Stokes has followed that up with taking four. They've both taken each other's wickets. Ben Stokes top scored in England's innings. Started looking a little bit at all-rounders. And, you know, you were probably just a little bit too young for the golden age. You know, we're talking about the Imran Khan, Kapil Dev, Richard Hadley, Ian Botham kind of era. But certainly over the years, we've been blessed with a lot of all-rounders in the game. I can't think of a time where there's so few all-rounders in Test cricket, top quality all-rounders as we've got now, because you've got Stokes and Holder at the top of the rankings. But after that, there's not a great deal behind them. Why is that?
I think you've got to factor in the fact that one of them is suspended. Shakib Al Hassan would be joining that too, wouldn't he? He'd be up there and has been for a lot of his career. I'm not sure. I don't think it's that recent a thing. I think since, 1992, how many great all-rounders have we had? South Africa have had quite a few. New Zealand have had some handy ones. I'm not sure that Chris Cairns probably quite counts as a great, an all-time great, probably does as a New Zealand great. How many have Sri Lanka ever had, for instance? And how many have India ever had? I mean, MS Dhoni did a whole tour of England where he just basically spent the whole time going, I wish we had Ben Stokes. Australia, realistically, perhaps have never had a great one since Keith Miller. We've had guys like Shane Watson who are handy and Steve Waugh who are handy. So I think it's actually, and I think maybe part of this is the way that we look at it, but also Test cricket is a real game for specialists. If you are not good enough with bat or ball, chances are that you are going to be found out at Test cricket level. I remember when Callis retired and South Africa replaced him with Ryan McLaren and Robin Peterson. You know, both good first-class players, good records. Anyone saw Ryan McLaren play for Kent knows how talented he is. Peterson was a very clever player, probably going to be a very important person within cricket as well. But if not a coach, then maybe in administration. And yet, they both looked like you and I had been brought in because their bowling skills were not of test quality and their batting skills were not of test quality. And I think you see this a lot. I talk about it as the Ian Botham, Derek Pringle rule. Derek Pringle was not a terrible cricketer. His test stats may not show him being a great cricketer. The problem was he didn't have a particular skill that made him a very good quality test cricketer, whereas Ian Botham did. So I think it's really hard to be a top quality test cricketer when you're looking at all-rounders, because I think you are found out in one discipline, sadly, sometimes in two disciplines. I say this stat all the time, and I don't just do it to mention his name, but Aubrey Faulkner is the only player in Test cricket to average over 40 with the bat and under 30 with the ball. There is a reason why that is the case. It is really hard. And if Sobers and Callis couldn't do it, and Imran Khan couldn't do it, it's tough.
I'm going to throw this at you. It's not fair, but who in the current ICC test rankings is the world's number four all-rounder?
Number four? Oh, that is interesting. So I think Ashwin number three?
Ashwin is number five.
Oh, okay. I wasn't far off. I knew Ashwin was up there. I think Ashwin's actually a very good batsman. I think he's been underrepresented. Also, those rankings never take in wicketkeeper batsmen, which are now all-rounders, which I find a bit odd. Who is number four? It will be someone like Mitchell Starc or Pat Cummins or something like that.
You're seriously good. It is Mitchell Starc. I'll give you the top 10 all-rounders. Holder, top by quite some distance. Then Stokes. Jadeja at three. Starc at four, as you mentioned. Ashwin at five. Colin de Grandhomme at six. Patrick Cummins, who you just mentioned, seven. Roston Chase, who we saw today, eight. Chris Wokes at 9 and Tim Southey at 10. So that tells you a little bit. But number 13, if you get that one, well, number then three. I just give up. And I'll give you a clue, because otherwise it's... Well, actually, no, I'll just say first off, number, can you guess who the 13th best all-rounder in the world is? Darragh Kimbo.
Is it Tim Murta?
No, it isn't. I'll give you one clue.
Yeah.
He's playing in this match.
Is it Mark Wood?
No.
Okay.
It's Kamar Roach.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Also...
Kamar Roach.
So mate, many...
Kamar yeah. Roach. 13th best all-rounder in world cricket.
Those rankings are obviously nonsensical, and they don't really work, other than maybe right at the top level. What I would say is also that you have to look at... It doesn't look at the whole picture. For instance, you could say right at the moment that Jason Holder is doing more things for his team than Ben Stokes when it comes to batting and bowling. What you couldn't say, though, is that Jason Holder isn't helping his team as much as Ben Stokes is, because Ben Stokes is playing as a top six batsman and then bowling the overs when they are needed, when there is something wrong. Jason Holder is basically playing as a bowler who can strengthen the batting a little bit at number eight. That is not as important as a role as getting a fifth bowler into the side. If Jason Holder moves to seven or even six, but I don't think he can bat at six, but I think he can certainly bat at seven, then you then have your number eight would be Rakeem Cornwall. They then have a five-man bowling attack, and they have Rakeem Cornwall potentially coming in when the other opposition bowlers are tired, and he can do scary things with the bat. So those sorts of things aren't factored in. So on pure numbers, I think Jason Holder's been better, but I actually think that Jason Holder can even have a bigger impact on West Indies cricket if he moves up the order.
They do have a five-man bowling attack, though, if you factor in Chase.
And I don't. So I've seen it. I was there when he took his 8-wicket haul, and I don't count him as a bowler. I mean, you can't compare him as a bowler. He's basically Marcus North type bowler, isn't he? Paul Collingwood type bowler. He's going to get you 8 to 10 overs, and occasionally when something comes magical, he'll take some wickets. But Rakeem Cornwall is a frontline bowler. They could have five frontline bowlers in their attack if Jason Holder changes where he bats, and there's no reason why he can't bat at number seven.
Well, just take Jermaine Blackwood out of that team, because that's shot today. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Moment of the day.
For me, it's when Shane Gowrich came in, and after a lot of grinding and a lot of defensive batting, he went after Dominic Best a little bit. I think he was 10 or 5 at one stage. I think that showed how much he's changed. I mean, this is his first innings in England since he averaged -3 or whatever you said at the start of the show. He averaged 40 in the last couple of years, and he averaged 40 in the West Indies when no one else could hit the ball off the square. We were there when he made that big 100. He's a perfect example of, because he's short, I think people think he's young. He's actually not that young. I think he's 27, 28. But he did have a very long period at the start of his career where he struggled. He's now, I mean, he might even get into the team as a batsman, because they've also got De Silva to bring in, who's another wicket-keeping batsman, who's a very, very good quality player as well. Gowrich is now shows to me that he has changed his game so much. I think he was unlucky to go out. He got strangled down the leg side trying to flick at one, didn't he? He deserved a nod out today, because I thought he batted brilliantly in that innings.
Yeah, when you factor in that catch yesterday as well to dismiss Butler. It was. You know, this is a guy that thinks very deeply about his cricket. He had a horror show 2 years ago, not just with the bat, but behind the stumps. Actually, he did a lot of work with James Foster. And credited him before this series started with helping him line up, essentially. Because, of course, the ball moves so much, you know, even when the batsman doesn't hit it, it moves a lot after it's gone past the batsman in English conditions. Maybe not so much at the Aegeus Bowl, but credit to Shane Gowrich. My moment of the day, a bit like day one, actually, took place on Sky Sports. Not sure if you saw it. You may have seen it mentioned on social media. Stuart Broad spoke and was asked about his feelings after being dropped. And look, Stuart Broad doesn't say anything. Stuart Broad knows what he's saying, essentially. But, you know, there was no, it's a long summer, I'm disappointed, but I'm sure I'm going to get a game and 6 tests in 7 weeks. He said he was gutted, angry and disappointed, and it had been a terrible couple of days. That was refreshing to hear, for one. But when you then have a look at the bowling figures. combined figures of Archer and Wood, 44 overs, five maidens, one for 135. You look at the speed in which wickets have been taken on this pitch, you've got to say that just like in that first test match against West Indies in Barbados, it looks like an error to have dropped him.
Yes, I suppose
it does. In hindsight.
I probably wouldn't have picked on this pitch Wood and Archer. I probably would have gone with Archer because he's the more skillful of the two. And I think you needed a little bit of that. So I probably would have gone with that. This is where I find it weird. We knew it was going to be a little bit overcast. It looked like it was going to be a pitch that was going to be weather damaged. Why would you want Wood in that situation, not over Broad? Why would you want Wood in that situation over Broad? And then the other thing is, if you are trying to protect Broad and his body, surely he plays in the first test, you give him a break, and he plays in the third test. It seems a little muddled to me. I don't know how the decision was made, because obviously Root's not there. I don't know how much this was Ed Smith or Spoons or Stokesy. I don't know how it all sort of fits together. But it just seemed a little bit muddled to me. And like at the time, I was thinking, are we pre-resting him? Because that doesn't make any sense. Really, what you want to do in a tight turnaround like this is rest him in the middle of the series. But maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably not wrong because they took none for.
I think it was Stokes. Stokes was very much behind the decision. What made me a little surprised was that at the toss, Stokes said, obviously, Mark Wood comes in. And he's backed Wood big time for a long time. And also, Mark Wood did take 9 wickets in the last test match. And Stokes said, so Wood comes in, you know, they wanted this out and out pace. I've heard a couple of mentions about this is a bowling attack they want for the Gabba at the end of next year. But, you know, this isn't a Gabba pitch. And Stokes is well aware of that because that was what he said at the toss. He said, this is a flat pitch. And so I just thought, well, I personally would have gone in with Broad, maybe ahead of Archer, because, of course, he missed South Africa. But hey, we just don't know we don't know, but it's certainly an interesting point. Another moment of the day for me was social media after Craig Brathwaite was given out. Now, yesterday we talked about the umpiring, home decisions and all of that. It was kind of evened out because there was a decision that went for West Indies, which was overturned. Roston Chase, I think, the LBW decision there. But Brathwaite, I thought, was very unfortunate to be given out. You know, that was a ball that, you know, the decision, the DRS, it did back up the umpire's decision, but that was a ball that pitched marginally in line and would have only clipped the top of Midland off stump. So, once again, very narrow decision going the way of the home side.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Shot of the day.
One of the indications that the pitch was evening out, but also going back to the point you were saying insofar that maybe England erred by bowling a touch too full, was the amount of cover drives we saw early on in the innings. And I was very impressed by Brooks, Shamar Brooks, you know, two or three of the on drives. And actually, if you look, I had a little read of his Crick Info profile before he came in, because I hadn't seen a lot of him. And the top line is that this guy is a beautiful on an off driver. We saw that today. One of the shots that just whisked past the stumps of the non-striker's end. Absolutely beautiful. Roston Chase as well, actually, just before the lunch break, just opened the bat up and drove square of the wicket. I'd say a couple of those off drives from Brooks and Chase, my shots of the day.
Yeah, mine is a Brooks on drive as well. It was Wood was trying to set him up for the straight full ball. I don't know if he's got off the LBW of the Yorker, and he just got it slightly wrong, but it was really fast and he had set him up. And Brooks, I thought just for a second, he's one of those batsmen who looks like he has a bit of extra time, but I just thought he was rushed a little bit, and yet he still got over it, you know, big bent elbow and punched it down the ground. I think he only got three for it. But when he played that off that ball after being set up, I thought he's a player.
Ball of the day.
There's a couple of great balls, wasn't there? There was Jason Holder right towards the end, Kemar Roach right towards the end, and very early on in the day, which is a little bit why I think one of the reasons I think back to Jofra not taking any wickets is maybe sometimes we look at the results rather than the individual deliveries that the bowlers bowl. He bowled a ball that I think it took Craig Brathwaite's edge, or it might have been Shai Ho. Took the shoulder of the bat, went over the slips. That was a brutal ball. We didn't see many of those from almost all the England bowlers, really, until the West Indians took the ball back at the end. And Kemar Roach, I think, might have hit Dom Sibley on the hand. But, yeah, I remember that Jofra balls. But there was some good balls there.
Yeah, I thought Jimmy Anderson bowled particularly well again today. He did give the impression, certainly when he picked up, I think, the third wicket of a guy that was finding it tough. It was mentally and physically tough. He hasn't bowled in a test match since August. It was quite hot out there. Obviously, just one warm-up, no real cricket. And it was, I think, both Anderson and Stokes, it was just more sheer force of mental strength that was getting them through today. And it's no surprise that arguably two of the strongest willed characters, and of course with the skills attached as well, were the ones that were most successful for England. But just a little sign of how difficult it can be being an opening batsman. You know, Kemar Roach and Shannon Gabriel just towards the close of play, it's that period, there's no benefit being out there unless you're Mark Butcher and you're either going to score an easy 20 or get out and be able to have a drink tonight. It was very taxing. Sibley was on a pair. Rory Burns looks taxing watching him bat all the time. But there was a couple of deliveries from Gabriel. We've talked about it. Coming around the wicket and the ball angling in and off stump and then just snaking past the outside edge. One of which, you know, both batsman and bowler just looked at each other and laughed. It's going to be your day one day and it isn't the next. But yeah, some absolutely brilliant, brutish deliveries towards the end. I thought England did pretty well to survive, but it's going to be tough on day four.
LOL of the day.
LOL of the day. Do you have a LOL of the day? It wasn't really a LOL day, was it, today? It was.
Just as you said that, I was like, do I have a LOL of the day? I can't remember. And maybe, actually, it's probably from the commentary. And Mikey Holding has, you know, gone viral with incredible comments about, you know, race and his parents and Ebony, Rainsford-Brent, the same. And yet, you know, he then today is talking about how many hits he's had on his YouTube page, which, and then Rob Key has to explain TikTok to him. Mikey Holding is having the best test he's had, you know, not at the Oval in the UK.
I tell you what, because normally we're at the ground, but of course, as we're not rights holders, we don't have access to it. We're watching, I mean, I do listen to Sky Sports when I'm there because you have those little headsets, but essentially, you know, watching a lot more of it, and it's been pretty good, I must admit. But one of the things that came from Sky Sports again today was, now, we are normally at the cricket, okay? Now, we pick up on a lot of stuff and see a lot of stuff that the audience back home do not, or the listeners as well. There are, on occasion, moments in the day where maybe a highly paid, incredibly professional, most of the time, former cricketer, maybe more keen that maybe he's letting on to get this test match wrapped up, and it may influence his position on air. On another occasion, maybe we're deep into back-to-back test territory, it's day three, and a commentator or two may find room at the back of a commentary box just to have a little snooze. Now, that kind of thing would never be picked up upon until now, because there are no fans. So if you're the kind of commentator who likes to have a sneaky cigarette down the stairwell or pop around the way just to have a cigarette, well, look out, because the cameras are going to pick up on you. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Until the fans come back, I think everybody's going to be on their best behaviour.
Anodyne press conference moment of the day.
Jimmy Anderson spoke to the press following play. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, well, I think the West Indies have had the best of the first few days, certainly. We're up against it a little bit, so we know exactly what we've got to do. We've got to bat well tomorrow, try and get a decent lead, or decent enough lead, get ahead of them so we can give ourselves a chance of bowling them out fourth innings and winning the game.
Jimmy Anderson there.
What is going to happen tomorrow?
Okay, Jared, now let's take it back 24 hours. What did you predict would happen today on day three?
Remember. Well, was I accurate?
No, I think I was more accurate. I said England would be batting by close and West Indies would have a narrow first innings lead. So maybe that wasn't quite so accurate. But that was definitely more accurate than what you were saying. I think you said that West Indies would struggle. And I think you said England would have a lead. But hey,
I only
starred on the following on podcast. I don't listen back to it.
What I will say is this. I said, and whatever my suggestion was, I said, unless the conditions change, and the conditions did change. So I'm
no,
still
we
wrong,
knew even the when conditions. No, we knew the conditions were going to change. We knew it was going to be a better batting day. I'm taking this one. Okay. Well, we know the conditions are going to be quite similar on day four. So what do you expect to happen on day four?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think watching how well West Indies bowled just before the close in, there's a lot of pressure on England. I think if they can get to 1-50 again, 50 for one, I don't know why I'm suddenly doing Australian scoring again. If they can get to 50 for one, with their middle order, with Stokes and Pope, they have a chance of at least scoring 300 to 350. I think if we see, and the way that Dom Sidley was leaving the ball, he might not last that long. Joe Denley, if he gets 100 balls, he's done well here. I think that the pressure of being behind and the quality of the West Indies bowling, I think might be too much for them. But it will be very interesting to see, because it is going to be another good batting day. So we're going to get a real test of how good the England batting lineup is.
I'm expecting a little bit from Alzari Joseph on day four. And I think the game is going to go one of two ways. I think that either West Indies are going to get on top early and they're going to strangle England. It's going to be very, very difficult. And we could see a result early day five. Or England are going to weather a bit of an early storm. But once they get past that 115 or whatever it is, and they start stretching out their lead themselves, I just got the feeling that the West Indies may just pull back a little bit, because they know that to get a draw in this game, okay, they wouldn't take it now, but if that was to be the case around tea, they'll just want to take a little bit of time out of the game, because they'll know that the only way that England can really win is one of those weird situations where England need to be bowled out. So both teams may kind of subconsciously come to the a decision that a draw will be where they want to be at the end of day five. But it's about predictions. I think it's difficult to see past what you're saying. West Indies, with bat and ball in this test match, have not given England any let up whatsoever. Apart from that drop in the field on Stokes, the second one, the first one was a bit of a tougher one. They've had control of this test match. Now, will the experience that England have in test matches over the last couple of years see them through? They must have played double the amount West Indies have. I'm not sure. I'm going to back West Indies to be strong tomorrow and to be in a position at stumps on day four where they're strong favourites to win this test match.
The only way I can see England doing well is if England bat out of their skins, because I just don't think that West Indies are going to drop the ball with the kind of pressure, the kind of bowling attack they have. I think they're going to be too accurate and too hard to score off. So it's going to have to be an incredible batting. That's why I sort of look at Stokes and Pope in that middle order.
Brilliant. Well, we'll find out whether I'll go 2-0 up in the predictions after absolutely wiping the floor with you today. Not that any of us can really remember what exactly you predicted for day three. That's pretty much it for the Foiling On podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen. We will be back at the end of every single day of this test series. So tune in either in the evening around 9 o'clock when the podcast usually appears, or early in the morning the following day. This is the Foiling On podcast. You can listen to us on Acast, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thanks for listening, and we will be back at the end of day 4 from the first test match between England and West Indies from the Aegeus Bowl.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.